Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 435 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how are you this week?
I'm good, my man. How are you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Yeah, it's great that you're home with Wi-Fi and not in the car this week. That'll be good for the listeners, I guess. But yeah, let's dive straight into the review part. We're going to start here. Last Thursday, the 8th of February, at the Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. It was live on Sky Sports. It was live on ESPN. I'm going to touch on the undercard. Abdullah Mason with a stunning knockout in round two. He's now 12-0. I don't know if you saw that, Eddie. That's fine, though. I'll get to that, you know, in a couple fights time. Benjamin Gomen in the other corner, the undefeated fighter, who was 8-0 with three draws. He's now 8-1 with those three draws. Moving up the card, Keyshawn Davis, now 10-0, a TKO in round six against former world champion Jose Pedraza, now 29-6 with a draw. Big fan of Jose Pedraza, like I've said on many, many occasions. Very, very impressive, I think, from Keyshawn. You know, we noted that Pedraza was quite inactive, you know, not in the best of form. Probably on his way out the sport, but to become only the second man to stop him here for Keyshawn was quite a statement, I felt. He beat up Pedraza, he bloodied him, it was one-sided, and Keyshawn was scarily calm for the whole fight. You know, it was almost scary how calm he kept. You know, he picked his shots so well, he went to the head and to the body nicely, he completely dominated the former champion, and for me, cemented his placement in the division. I think he's the truth. Good stoppage from referee Thomas Taylor. And yeah, Keyshawn's a very exciting fighter in and outside of the ring. He gets some serious leverage on his hooks from close up. I like that about him. I think he's got a, you know, a sparkly personality. And yeah, I really like what I see. I've been a big fan of his for quite a while he was coming through. I think he's, you know, he's gone from prospect to contender with a win like that. And yeah, there's massive fights out there for him at 140. I'd love to see the Arnold Barboza fight. I don't know if it makes sense politically, but I'd love to see that one if politics weren't a thing in boxing, which of course they always have been and always will be. But yeah, that one, by the way, was for the IBF USBA lightweight title and the WBC USA lightweight title and the WBO intercontinental lightweight title. And I don't know, again, if you saw that, Eddie, but I'll come to you for this one here. Teofimo Lopez, now 20-1, a unanimous decision, which was interesting, over 12 rounds. He retains his WBO world super lightweight title. He defeated Jermaine Ortiz, now 17-2, with a draw. I'm going to come straight to you, Eddie. Did you see those fights on the undercard, and what did you make of the main event?
No, but I saw the main event. I didn't see the other two. I saw the main event. It's just like I said, though, with Ortiz. He's just a difficult fighter to fight. You know what I mean? He understands. You know, even with the high level competition, like when he fought Lomachenko, as well as in this fight, he's just not going to be an easy guy to fight. You know what I mean? For pretty much nobody. I mean, there may be somebody out there, you know, tends to, you know, figure it out a little bit better than these last two guys have, but it was you could see that Teofimo was getting a little frustrated. He didn't know what to do, trying to close the gap, sometimes took shots on the way in. Because, you know, there's a lot of pressure, and I tell guys a lot, you know, about this. It's like when you have so much to lose, especially with, you know, Teofimo talking what he is saying, some of the stuff he says, he has to get in there and back it up. So there's a lot of pressure on him. So that's when you talk, it puts pressure on you, a great deal of pressure, because now you have to perform. And if you don't perform, then the backlash is going to be crazy, especially if you lose or get a decision somewhat like the decision that he got. I don't necessarily think it's hard for me to see say he won, especially free and clear. I think that, you know, at different times in the fight, you know, it you know, was maybe close, but I don't know, man. He looked really difficult to hit. He had a hard time breaking range and trying to find his range. It wasn't an easy fight, and I never thought it would be. It's just an unfortunate thing, and he just this stuff that he says, he just speaks right off of the. It's almost like a woman a little bit, man. Like, he speaks right out of emotion. No disrespect to the women, but he's like, he speaks right out of emotion. As soon as he hears something, he just comes out and says it. And sometimes it's okay to wear your heart on your sleeve, but you still got to be professional. You still got to take your emotions and kind of put them away a little bit when it comes to being, you know, you can say what you want to say and live how you want to live. But the reality of it is you're in the public eye, and you don't want to be looked at in a negative light just because you're an emotional, you know, character, and you just want to talk all the time and say just what comes to your mind without any kind of filter. I understand being true to yourself, but you just got to be careful what you say, especially when, and you know, given a performance like that. I'm not saying that he was necessarily bad. He just struggled in the fight. So, you know, in my opinion, he needs to maybe be coached a little bit more on how to speak people and what to say. You know what I mean? To a degree, and understand that, yeah, you be yourself, say what you want to say, but you still need to, you want to carry yourself more professional. And saying some of the things that he did within the crowd. I mean, I understand the crowd booing and saying what they, you know, what they feel or whatever. But the reality of it is, man, you still got to be pro, like a pro. You got to be a professional and carry yourself like that. So, all in all, interesting fight. I'm pretty sure a lot of people didn't enjoy it, but that's the kind of fight that those type of fighters are gonna, you know, are gonna bring. You know, you got one guy who's interested in winning the fight by any means necessary, decision or whatever, and then another guy that has to show out. And sometimes it, you know, it doesn't work out for the best, you know, for the fans. But I thought the skill level was high. But yeah, I just thought that Teofimo needed to be reined in a little bit, and I'm not too sure about that decision too, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the decision myself. I mean, I made a big case for Jermaine Ortiz on last week's show. I said it'd be a tough fight for Teofimo, and that Ortiz was a live underdog. Ortiz, you know, he didn't give a damn in that ring about the crowd, because you mentioned there, you know, a bit of the negativity in his style. You know, there were times where the crowd were booing. And yeah, I mean, Jermaine Ortiz boxed to a perfect game plan for me. He came to box off the back foot. He racked up a bunch of rounds doing that. Boxing rings around Teofimo Lopez. Like you said, Teofimo at times would just lunge forward and, you know, we'd see a massive miss. It was really bad. There was times where he was tripping over his own feet. Teofimo just, he could not cut off the ring at all. He was just following him around. And like I say, getting frustrated, you know, going back to the ropes, trying to invite him in, and he didn't fall for it. I loved what Ortiz was doing. Listen, Teofimo is a friend of the show. He's been on the podcast. You know, he's my guy. But Ortiz would kind of like follow him over there when he'd bait him in, just throw like one or two shots and then just get out of there. That's it. Whack, whack. They both land and see you later. He wouldn't stay there too long. He wasn't, you know, he was the much more mentally stronger fighter in that ring. And yeah, I loved it. I really loved it. It was a really good fight. I mean, not to watch, but from Ortiz's point of view. Yeah, Teofimo was just extremely frustrated. Some people had it 6-0 at the halfway point for Ortiz. I only kind of started scoring the fight in the second half of it. Teofimo did have success in the 7th. He cut Ortiz, but that was a head clash that caused that cut. Ortiz had a good 8th round, a good 9th round. And yeah, he was just controlling everything for me. And not at any point did Ortiz actually put a dent in Teofimo, but like I say, he was there to throw that jab. He landed some fantastic jabs, and when he threw his right hand, you know, he had success with that. That was landed nicely. But like I say, the main punch of the fight for him was the jab. The punch stats at the end were quite confusing, seeing them really close. I don't know how that was possible. I really thought Ortiz shaded most of those rounds, you know, quite clearly. Teofimo, I gave round 11. I think the 12th round was close. And I said it before and I'll say it again, Teofimo is not the same fighter up at 140. You know, he's falling short of his punches. He's missing all of his power shots. He's unable to cut off the ring, like I already said. And yeah, I think Ortiz certainly did enough to win the fight, but obviously didn't get the decision. I'm gutted for him because I really think he should be a world champion right now. We know, you know, we talk about it a lot. We know how tough, well, I don't, but you do, Eddie, how tough it is to obviously get in there and then get robbed when you've clearly beaten, you know, a fighter that was expected to beat you, and then you don't feel, you know, you don't feel like you got the credit for beating them because the judges saw it the other way, and that was what we saw here again. And I hate to say that because, like I said before, Teofimo is my guy. He's been on the show. You know, Jermaine Ortiz, I don't know the guy, but he clearly won that fight for me, and it's a sad day for boxing once again. I just don't know what we can do. We keep talking about robberies all the time, and this was another one for me. I think it was that clear. Let's move on to the Indigo at the O2. This one was in Greenwich, London, United Kingdom. It was live on DAZN. I have to say I didn't see anything on this card at all because I was at another show, so I've missed this whole thing. I don't suppose you saw it, Eddie. If you did, jump in. If not, I'll carry on. But Shannon Ryan, friend of the show, now 7-0, a unanimous decision for her over the previously undefeated Jasmina Zapotoxna, who's now 6-1. Ryan was cut, though. A bad, bad cut. A head clash in round 8. She was covered in blood. She managed to get that decision, though, over 10 twos. Also on the card, we saw Reese Bellotti. Again, I am so happy for this guy. I cannot put into words how happy I am for him. Gave him massive credit when we did the awards at the end of the year in 2023. And like I say, it was a dream for him to become a British champion. And he's done that. He's the new British and Commonwealth super featherweight champion. He was able to beat the previously undefeated Liam Dillon, who's now 13-1 with a draw. Completely haven't seen the fight, like I said. I thought that Bellotti would probably stop Dillon, but I did fancy him to win. He was a slight favourite on the night. He's now 18-5, and he has turned his career round. I mean, he really has. And I don't think there's going to be many super featherweights dying to fight Reese Bellotti. I really, really, really am just over the moon for him, man. Like I said, he looked like his career was down and out. It looked like he was finished, and he's come back. And the momentum he has right now, it's that special kind of momentum where you just don't know where it's going to end. It's a little bit like Maxie Hughes type of turnaround, you know, even though Maxie Hughes, obviously, I think is, you know, a few levels higher than British title level, at least. But he did the same kind of thing. He went on a mad run. And yeah, Reese Bellotti, man, the way he's turned it round, who knows what he can do. All the best to him. I'm so happy for him. Imagine if he were to somehow defend that 3 times and win it outright. It'd be crazy. All the best to Reese Bellotti. Also on the card as well, friend of mine and friend of the show, Craig Richards. I spoke to him yesterday. And I was going to get him on this week's podcast, but he went on holiday. I think he had a flight to catch about 4 a.m. So he's gone to the Canary Islands. And it wouldn't really be right of me to bother him while he's on holiday. But anyway, good win for him. He's now 18-3 with a draw. A TKO for him in round 7 against Boris Crichton, who's now 12-5. That's a really good win for Craig Richards because, like I say, that's the first fight for him that he's had under his new trainer, Shane McGuigan. And as we know, Boris Crichton is a tried and tested guy on that domestic scene. You know, been the distance with Lyndon Arthur, lost on points to him on a couple of days' notice, lost on points as well to Callum Simpson, who's a big puncher, and Craig Richards was able to put him away, had him down, gets him out of there. So a brilliant win for him. Really, really happy for Craig, honestly. One of boxing's good guys. And moving now to the card that I was at the Copper Box Arena. Fantastic to be at boxing 2 weeks running. Let's start with the undercard. Carol Itauma with a win now, 12-1. I got to the arena during this fight, only caught the last couple of rounds, but he was able to win on points against Eros Saghetti, who was undefeated. He was 10-0 with a draw. He's now 10-1 with a draw. Anthony Yard with a win. He is now 25-3. A TKO for him in round three against Marko Nikolic, who's now 32-4. Nikolic down twice in the second round and once in the third. He could not deal with the body shots. Some of them didn't even look like much, but like I say, he was folded over from those shots. I didn't even think, well, I thought he might come out for round three, but people around me were saying, oh, I don't know if he's going to come out for round three. Got dropped twice in the second. He went back to his corner very gingerly. And yeah, he did come out in round three, so credit to him. And he was stopped at, at 1 minute 15 seconds into that third round. There was a guy sat next to me, I'm not going to name any names, but he put a £500 bet on the fact that Yard would stop this guy within 2.5 rounds. So 2 rounds were completed, and then into the third round he had to knock him out within the first minute and a half, and he got it done in 1 minute and 15 seconds. So the guy next to me was 16 seconds away from losing £500. The bet won, he was happy. So yeah, that was a madness. But yeah, good to see Yard back. Like I say, he needs to kind of get back in the bigger fights. They're talking about Buatsi. I know that Josh Buatsi was there, and they shared a bit of a post-fight interview, I think, on ringside, but we couldn't hear it through the speakers in the arena, so I don't know what happened there, but be great to see it if the politics don't get in the way. There were a lot of, you know, boxer fighters at the card. You know, Dan Aziz was there, Josh Buatsi was there, I seem to be forgetting everyone else, but there was a few fighters that box on Sky Sports that were there. I think Adam Azim, yeah. So there was quite a big number of them. I was quite surprised to see that many guys from a different promoter. Also on the card, really fun fight. Masoud Abdullah now 10-0. A TKO for him in round 5 against Kez Ashfaq, now 12-3. Ashfaq down 3 times in the 5th. His corner threw the towel in. Really, really, really exciting fight while it lasted. Masoud Abdullah just went for it in the first round. Came at Ashfaq, which is probably the right thing to do. I think Ashfaq as a pro has obviously been very, very poor, actually. I'm not going to mince my words there. He's a really good amateur, turned over as a pro, doesn't seem to kind of take to the game like a duck to water, as they say. He seems to have took to it quite badly. I don't know if he left his best days in the amateurs. Unfortunately, that is the way it can go for some guys. But yeah, you know, politics have kind of got in the way of his career, Kez Ashfaq, behind the scenes. And when he got back active, he just wasn't good enough, really. So yeah, I don't know what to say for him. He did have moments in the fight. He was catching Abdullah with some massive uppercuts, some really lovely, juicy uppercuts that were definitely catching the eye of the judges. He did definitely hurt Abdullah as well, had him on Bambi legs at one point in the fight. I can't remember what shot he caught him with, but like I say, Abdullah, he was quite happy to have that kind of fight. And yeah, you know, did really well in the end. He was catching him again, I think it was with body shots, had him down. And yeah, Ashfaq kind of had the fight beaten out of him. And that is, for me, that should probably be the end of the road for Ashfaq. I just don't think, you know, it's doing him any good staying in kind of domestic level and getting a pasting at that level. I don't think that that's what he, you know, wanted to aspire to as a pro. And these losses are racking up now. It's quite embarrassing for him, I'd say. Also on the card, friend of the show, Sam Noakes. He's from Maidstone. His hands are made of stone. They certainly are. He's 13-0 now with 13 KOs. He was able to TKO in round 4. Luis Sylvester, who was 13-0, now 13-1. Sylvester down twice in the 3rd and once in the 4th. His corner threw the towel in. It was for the vacant British, the Commonwealth, the WBC International Silver and the WBO International Lightweight titles. Really happy for Sam Noakes because, like I say, he's picked up a good belt there, the British. And I will go on to say that I actually thought it was going to be a round four stoppage. I said that to a few guys ringside. Sam Noakes had said to me that, you know, him and Sylvester had sparred in the past. Sylvester's a great mover for a few rounds, but once those legs, you know, tire a little bit, then he's going to be in trouble. And I thought he'd be good for a few rounds. I don't actually think he was good for a few rounds. I think Sam Noakes won every round and then stopped him. But I wouldn't mind seeing Sylvester again. I think he's obviously got a few skills in his locker, but Sam Noakes just hits so hard. You know, he's such a fit guy, so strong. And yeah, I mean, if you're going to fight his fight, which sometimes you kind of have to because he kind of forces you to, then there's only going to be one winner. And I'm so excited for his future. I mean, he's a cracking guy, and he can crack in the ring as well, you know. So yeah, it's going to be exciting to see him develop, and I just really want to see him in with Gavin Gwynn. I think that would be for the European title. Obviously Gwynn's fighting Mark Chamberlain, he's got to get the winner of that. I think he beats both those guys comfortably, and then he'd become European champion with ease, actually. So the sky's the limit for him, actually. And yeah, the main event, Hamza Shiraz, now 19-0, a TKO in the very first round against Liam Williams, friend of the show, now 25-5 with a draw. Williams down twice prior to his corner throwing the towel in. Madness there for the WBC silver and Commonwealth middleweight titles. Like I say, I didn't expect the fight to go the distance, but I did give Williams a bit of a chance, just simply because you never kind of know what you're going to get with Williams, you know? At one point, he was on a crazy run. I remember him destroying Alontez Fox in a couple of rounds. He looked amazing that night. I was at that fight. Alontez is a friend of mine. So's Liam, to be honest with you. But he destroyed him. And then he got the fight with Demetrius Andrade. And I thought, wow, this is it. He could beat Andrade. I was proven very wrong there. He wasn't really in the fight. He had some moments late on. But then that Eubank fight, you know, I hate to keep going back to that, but he was terrible that night there. Got put down four times, but he didn't get stopped. So there's something to admire about that. And then he did tell me that, you know, he perforated his eardrum in the build-up to the fight, should have pulled out. His balance wasn't quite there. And I gave him the benefit of the doubt, you know. I thought, okay, because it's either that or you have absolutely no punch resistance left, and I don't know where that's gone, because it didn't really, you know, it wasn't really a problem against Demetrius Andrade. So what's happened from there to the Eubank fight when your punch resistance is totally gone like overnight? But anyway, came back with two wins against two journeymen, a first round knockout and a second round knockout, and all of a sudden, like I said on last week's show, I really explained this, I said, either, you know, do you read something into those two knockout wins where he looked really good against complete nobodies? Or, you know, do we not read into it at all and we look at the last real fight he had against Eubank where he was awful? And the last real fight before that when he boxed Demetrius Andrade and he was pretty awful there as well. I wasn't too sure. I kind of wanted to see both things being a possible, you know, a possible truth. And unfortunately, it was the latter of the two. That punch resistance is absolutely gone for Liam Williams. And I cannot believe it. Absolutely gone. You know, he was being hurt badly, wobbled badly with jabs. And I know that Hamza Shiraz is a big, tall, strong guy with an unbelievable jab. A really, really, really good jab. But they shouldn't have been troubling Liam Williams like that. And I really thought, you know, he's a smaller guy, Williams, he might be able to get up there close, you know, make it, you know, a personal fight, and yeah, turn it into a bit of a war on the inside, you know, and he'd have moments. I really thought we'd see some rounds here. I didn't think it got a distance, but I thought we'd see some rounds, you know, a good fight until the stoppage came at some point, probably around the midway point. No one expected a first round knockout. Unbelievable. The sky's the limit for Hamza Shiraz again. They're talking about a Chris Eubank Jr. fight. I think that makes a lot of sense. I do, though, go back to that Bradley Skeet win, where it was a little bit controversial and he was having problems with Bradley Skeet, who was semi-retired. That was a really bad look for him, even though he won the fight. So I think he's improved a lot since then, by the way. But I would be quite careful with him, because I think he's in a great position. He's got to be world ranked now by at least one or two of the organizations. You know, I think they could get him a big money fight. So I'd protect that at the moment. That'd be my route, to try and get him a big money fight. Some other fights I think are a little bit risky. You know, they've talked about some other names, like, for example, Liam Smith. I mean, it'd be a good fight. I'd like to see it, but I'm not so sure it makes the commercial sense that would make me want to take that fight for Shiraz if I was looking out for him. Again, I don't know what Smith's got left, because his punch resistance looked kind of gone against Eubank again. It's so hard, you know, what to read into as truth and not truth. But anyway, back to what I was saying, Liam Williams, I think, should probably hang him up. The punch resistance has gone, and Hamza Shiraz, the sky is the limit. And like I say, there's a hell of a lot of fights out there for him, but he needs to be careful which ones he chooses, in my opinion. That's it, though, for the review part. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former WBO Global Welterweight Champion. He is, of course, Mr. Chris Congo. Chris, welcome back on the show, my man.
Yes, yes. How are you? Good?
Always good when speaking with you, my friend. So, Chris, we last spoke back in January of last year, just after the SMM fight. Here we are, just over a year later. Not much has happened, my man. What's kept you out so long?
You know, I've just been waiting for dates and stuff. You know how these promoters are. But the main thing is I'm out now. So, I'm happy.
And I just wanted to touch on, obviously, after the Essamon fight, he went on to lose his titles to big underdog Harry Scarfe. I did not see that one coming at all. What did you make of that fight? Did you see it?
Same. I thought Echo would have beat him, to be honest. But I think he just had Echo's number, you know. He knew what he was about. They'd sparred loads of rounds, apparently. So, the better man won on the night.
Yeah, another example of styles make fights. And yeah, let's talk about the reason you're here. March the 31st at the O2, you'll be boxing Florian Marku on that Wardley-Clark undercard. There seems to be a bit of bad blood there. Where did it stem from, Chris?
Well, it's come from, obviously, about 3 years ago when he boxed on AJ's undercard. He was looking for an opponent because his previous opponent pulled out. And I put my name in the mix and said, I'll fight, ready to go. And he was making excuses. He's been avoiding me for years, but now he's had to beat, which ain't really top caliber, you know. And now's the time, you know. He's got to step up to the plate, and I'm the person for it. So, yeah.
And I know that there was a press conference in which he shoved you. Obviously, you're quite a chilled guy normally, but did that flick a switch in you in any way?
100%. From then, I knew we got to make this fight happen. You know, that's got to be my next fight. And now, thanks to my management, Disturbing Sports, working with a boxer, it's happened.
And what do you think about Marku, Chris? I mean, do you respect him? How highly do you rate him as a boxer?
Well, he's a good fighter. You know, he does certain things well, but we know we once we've got our game plan right, we've got our film studies, we've got what he does regularly in fights. We've all got that on tape, and we've been studying him well, and now's the time for me to expose that.
It's interesting you say about studying him, because I sometimes speak to fighters who claim, they swear they don't watch any tape, but you're quite happy to say, we've been studying. And I know that you have, because obviously we were hoping to do this interview a bit sooner, but you were studying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And we're big on film studies up at our gym. Some gyms and trainers don't really, you know, focus on it too tough. They like to focus on what their fighters do well and build on it. But in our gym, we do that, but we also focus on what we can exploit on other fighters, and just really getting down to the brink of it, of brink of everything, in a fight, because loads of scenarios play out in certain fights with certain people, and we really break it down up at our gym, and that's why we get the results.
And talking of the tactical side of it and all the scenarios that can unfold in a ring, how do you see this fight playing out? Because I think we've seen a few guys in the past fight Marku. They seem to go into a shell. They allow him to dictate the pace. They allow him to be on the front foot, and he loves that. It plays into his hands. How do you see this fight playing out, seeing as you know him very well?
That definitely is not going to happen, you know. Obviously, I don't want to give away too much, but I'm telling you now, he's going to find it hard to try and not even necessarily pin me down. But when you look at certain things that he does, and he doesn't do certain things very well, and even little things down to his ring generalship, yeah? So let's see how it goes. I don't want to give away too much, but all I'm saying is no words. And we'll see on the 31st of March.
We will see. And being brutally honest, I mean, obviously, you didn't plan on, you know, losing to McKinson. You didn't plan on losing to Esserman. Your career in recent times hasn't gone to plan as such. I'm sure you still have high hopes for yourself, of course. But is this fight a must win? Because I'll say it myself, a loss here puts you in a bad spot. You don't want another year of inactivity.
Well, at the end of the day, I don't focus on losing or focus on any of that. But listen, I come from nothing. So me being in a position to still fight now and be in that position is a win for me already, you know. And on the 31st, I'll get another win, you know, all thanks to God.
No, absolutely, brother. I'm just saying, obviously, like I say, when you're coming off a loss, you've seen it yourself. You're not a priority to a promoter. It's just so damaging. And you're in your prime years, I feel. But no, 100%, I agree with you. I do want to get your take on the main event. Fabio Wardley, Fraser Clark. A lot of people are on the fence here, man. Are you going to be on the fence? Who do you think wins?
To be honest, I know Fraser very well from being on GB, but I also know Fabio Wardley just from being in the gym, you know. And one thing I would say, Fabio Wardley has improved, you know. He's come on leaps and bounds, doing very well in the gym. And even the other day I had to tell him, bro, you're improving, you know. I've seen a lot in this game, and I think for me, I got Fabio on a points win for this fight.
Points win, interesting, because he's on a heck of a knockout run. But yeah, I see it. Just before we let you go, Chris, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, if you want to sign out with a little message, it's great to have you back on after a year.
Yeah, for sure. Just to the listeners and everyone that's going to be watching and supporting, thank you. And the main thing for this fight is put God first, and I'm putting God first, and the rest will come off of it. So yeah, all praise to the Lord.
There we go, my friend. Listen, it's always a pleasure having you on. Thanks for your time. Best of luck for the 31st of March, and we'll speak sometime afterwards.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part. We're going to start here with this piece of news. Subriel Matias has signed a promotional deal with Matchroom Boxing. That's exciting news, I guess. Obviously, you know, people are talking about it'd be fantastic to see him in with Devin Haney. I'm just wondering, though, if Matchroom are going to try to kind of keep him away from Haney, you know, like sign him and then keep him away, just like they did with Luis Ortiz all those years ago. Signed him and kept him a million miles away from Anthony Joshua. I don't know. I mean, Ortiz didn't have a belt. Joshua did at the time, so it was easier to keep him away. Obviously, Matias has got a belt, though, so it might be harder. Maybe they just want to make that fight in-house and you know, keep it, you know, that way whoever wins, they've still got the winner. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting move. He's a great fighter. I can't believe, I mean, I don't know who he was signed to before. I can't remember now, but whoever's lost him has really lost, you know, it's a bad loss, you know, because he's a very, very good fighter, very fun style, massive puncher. And, you know, he gives anyone problems. There's so many great fights out there for him. You know, they're speaking about Richardson Hitchens. I think that one might be a dangerous fight for Hitchens, man. I'm not so sure about that one, if he's ready for that just yet. obviously Hitchens, friend of the show, would love to see him win it. Regis Progray as well. Would be great to see him in with Matthias. Anyway, good piece of news there. What else do we have? One fight has been announced as well on the undercard of Woodley Clark. That again goes down on March the 31st. We're going to see Alan Babich get in there with Steve Robinson. I think Babich is going to annihilate Robinson there, but it'll be fun. It's good to see Alan the Savage Babich back. And also Callum Simpson to get out on that undercard, but no opponent for him just yet. Before we move on to the preview part, Eddie, good friend of ours, good friend of the podcast, Luigi on Twitter. He was speaking earlier, and I saw he made a tweet, and he was talking about boxers with you know, good chins, and he said that... he thinks Jake LaMotta had the greatest chin in boxing history, and he talked about, you know, better chin than George Chavallo, better chin than Marvin Hagler. And I just chimed in and said, for me, it would be Oliver McCall. And he said, like, really, you think McCall had a better chin than LaMotta or Chavallo or Hagler? And he said, ask Eddie what he thinks. Before, though, you answer it, I just want to give my reasoning for Oliver McCall. Obviously, you're going to know everything here, Eddie, but, you know, the way that, you know, in that first fight the second fight, wasn't it? Was it the first one he beat Lewis, didn't he? The second one where he lost to Lewis, he starts crying in the ring. He lets Lewis just tee off on him and he couldn't hurt him.
Yeah.
And that was that to this day was the one time he actually got quote unquote stopped. And it was because he was all over the place mentally. Obviously, we know he sparred countless rounds with a prime Mike Tyson. He carried on boxing till he was 54, and he never got stopped other than that one night there. And he was never, ever down in sparring or fighting, never even wobbled. And again, you're going to appreciate this, a 6'2" heavyweight, madness.
I can't argue too much. I've seen guys who were like trial horses that never actually been off their feet, never been stopped, never really been hurt. You know, it really wasn't really much evidence of any, you know, major, any evidence of it. You know, like you said, be it sparring or a fight. But Oliver McCall has a hell of a resume when you think about it. I didn't even think about him being as old as he was, still competing and never being stopped, never really being hurt. That's a hell of an accomplishment. I think, and I know you're going to say, well, how? Because he's been stopped before. But I think Mike Tyson has a really underrated chin. And I said this before, because if you really watch Mike Tyson throughout his career, the only time he was ever really truly hurt was when he was, when I say ever really truly hurt, I mean like from just punching power per se, and even that it was like an accumulation, and it was with Buster Douglas. But if you watch his fights, man, he took punishment from guys. I mean, I'm talking flush bombs from guys. I mean, also Evander Holyfield, but it's always been, you know, when he's fatigued or an accumulative effect over that. And I know you're going to say, well, Oliver McCall never showed any of that, no matter whether it was 12 rounds or one. He always, you know, was able to hold it. But I'm just saying he's been in here with so many high-level people, high-level fighters, and just always has been able to just deal with the punches until he got tired. Like, he has a really – I just had to bring that up as an honorable mention. But he's really – I think his chin has been somewhat – I don't know if guys ever even really mentioned it because, you know, his power kind of overshadows it, his overall ability and his fame. But his chin, man, his chin, I really think was a special, because he's only a 5'10", you know, heavyweight fighting these big, super, you know, super big monster guys, hitting with these big shots, and he just kept coming. So, yeah, that was my little two cents. But I can't totally disagree with that, Joe. I mean, I know even Jake LaMotta, these guys have fought major fights and taking punches from some of the all-time greats. I mean, obviously we didn't see it live, but they've experienced a lot. But Oliver McCall, Oliver McCall has a hell of a chin. I didn't even think about that. Taking flush bombs from Lennox on a consistent. You know who else has a pretty good chin too? Is David Tua. I don't know if you remember him. Yeah. He had a hell of a chin. He took some shit from Lennox as well as Hassan Rahman.
Hassan Rahman, yeah.
He actually, I did see him hurt though. He got hurt right at the end of their second fight, and it was at the Spectrum, Philadelphia, and I was at the fight, and I see him get caught at the end of the fight, and like he lost his legs a little bit and went down, but it didn't count. I think it was like, I forget. I think it might have been like slightly after the bell. But anyway, regardless.
That's right. Man. That's right. Yeah. I think there was a few hitting after the bell in their fights. But yeah, I just think I have to give it to a heavyweight, and that's taking nothing away from LaMotta, but you're getting in there with, you know, heavyweights, you know, high level, top level heavyweights over such a long career. And you're not going down. I mean, that's crazy, you know. Like, obviously, you mentioned, I'm going to just run through some of those guys that he got in with. Oliver McCall, James Buster Douglas, Bruce Seldon, Tony Tucker, Francesco Damiani, Lennox Lewis twice, Larry Holmes, Frank Bruno. I mean, Frank Bruno, by the way, managed 40 wins in his pro career, 38 knockouts. And obviously, he won on points against Oliver McCall that night there in Wembley. Who else did he box? He boxed later on in his career, went on to box. Who did he box? He Abragimov. Some of the kind of way younger guys like your Francesco Pianettas. I don't want to bring up completely irrelevant guys, but there's many more. Henry Akinwande as well. There's so many guys this guy got in with. But anyway, I don't want to give too long to that little segment there. Let's move on to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here later tonight. Again, another Thursday night card. 2 weeks running now at the Commerce Casino in California, USA. Friend of the show, Joseph Jojo Diaz, back in action. And currently 33-4 with a draw. He gets in with Jesus Campos, who's 24-5. Jesus Campos, it's over 10 rounds. Campos never been stopped. Jojo never been stopped either. Two very, very tough guys. Jojo's the big favourite. I mean, this guy Campos has lost 3 of his last 4 fights. But they've been to good fighters. He lost to Alexis Rocha, Brian Norman Jr., Danielito Zoria, who we remember arguably beat in Regis Progre, but not getting the decision. This guy's kind of been thrown in, you know, into tough fights, Campos. But again, he's lost all of his big fights. I mean, I'm going to just put that out there as it is. But obviously, Jojo Diaz, you know, his dedication to the sport is definitely something that needs to be questioned. He's lost 3 of his last 4 fights as well. But again, quite good company. William Zepeda, Devin Haney, Mercito Gesta. And that one was really bad. He should not have lost to Gesta, in my opinion. You know, he should be beating guys like that. He's coming off a win last time against Jerry Perez. But again, people were tipping Perez to beat him because he's been in that bad form. He's back though here. I'm hoping that, you know, he's in good shape. That's always a question mark with Jojo, unfortunately. But I'm hoping that, you know, he's head screwed on and he's 100%. Because I got a lot of time for Jojo, man. Very honest guy. You know, we've had a couple of interviews with him, and he's such a raw guy. He says things, and I'm like, there's times where I've had to say to him off the phone, like, "You sure you want me to put that out?" And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, man. But that's, you know, you're telling me things in that interview that fighters don't like to, you know, don't like to talk about. Or if they do, they say, hey, can you cut that bit out? He is very raw. All the best to him. Moving now, though, to a place in Mexico that I'm not even going to dare to try to pronounce. But anyway, it's going down in Mexico. It's going to be live on DAZN. This one takes place on Friday night. And it's kind of annoying because there's 2 Friday night cards that clash with each other. But anyway, let's start with this one here in Mexico. Like I say, Matchroom Boxing live on DAZN. We're going to see the rematch for the IBF World Light Flyweight title. It's over 12 rounds, of course. The champion, Adrian Curiel, is 24-4 with a draw. He's not known at all as a puncher, but was able to get a stunning knockout in just two rounds against the South African Sivanathi Nontshinga, dethroned him in Monaco. And yeah, he gets back in with him here. It is an instant rematch. They boxed in November, so it's only been 3 months. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Nontshinga was a massive favourite. He wasn't supposed to have any problems at all with Curiel. When Curiel caught him with that shot and knocked him spark out in round two, yeah, it was a massive, massive shock. Some people were saying biggest upset of the year. And then they're rematching now, and Curiel's the favourite, you know. Nontshinga is the underdog. So I think it's an opportunity to bet on Nontshinga. He should win, in my opinion. But I don't know, you know. You get knocked out like that, you don't know how you look. Like, it could have... You get knocked out in that fashion, you know, you might never be the same fighter again. And we haven't seen him at all. It's an instant rematch. And it was only 3 months ago. But like I say, it will be interesting. And this time he actually travels to Mexico. So he's going to the champion's backyard. It's not in Monaco, which would be very much, you know, mutual ground. This is very much in Mexico. On the undercard as well, we're going to see the always fun and exciting Maurizio Lara, former world champion, 26-3 with a draw. It's over 10 rounds for him at super featherweight. He gets in with Daniel Lugo, who's 27-2. I'm expecting Lara to probably stop Lugo. I mean, you know, his career's not, his resume's not great, you know, it's not too great. He's been stopped in one of his two losses. It was back in 2021 to a guy who was 16-4 with a draw. I don't know what to make of it, to be totally honest with you. So yeah, don't know too much about the guy. And then moving to the last card to mention of the preview part of the show, it goes down on ESPN. Again, like I say, it's on Friday, so unfortunately these two shows will clash, ESPN and DAZN. Or in the UK, I guess it's going to be Sky Sports and DAZN. We're going to see, going to go straight to the main event, I think, actually, and work our way down. Oshaki Foster making his, what will it be, his second defence of his WBC super featherweight world title. He gets in with Abraham Nova. He's coming off a fantastic performance last time out, Oshaki Foster, when he beat Eduardo Hernandez. He's back here, like I say. Abraham Nova, 23-1. Interesting that Oshaki Foster in his last three fights has boxed on... Well, his last two fights, he boxed on a Matchroom card on DAZN, then a PBC card. I think it was the other way around, but he boxed on an Al Haymon show, then a Matchroom show with Eddie Hearn, and now it's going to be a Bob Arum Top Rank show. So he really is working with everyone. But he's in with Top Rank's Abraham Nova, who's 23-1, coming off a good win last time against former world champion Jonathan Romero, who had quite a padded record, to be honest with you. Knocked him out in three rounds, beat Adam Blue Nose Lopez as well before that. He's been quite, I say, active over the last couple of years, and I think he's a fun fighter. He's a big underdog, and I understand why. Oshaki seems to have a lot of tools, you know. He seems to be able to fight. He seems to be able to box. I think he's got that grit. He showed that in that fight last time out. And obviously, Nova's one loss came to Rabisi Ramirez, who is a great, great fighter. So I think this will be a competitive fight, but I do understand why Oshaki Foster's the favourite, though he probably shouldn't be as big a favourite as he is. So, yeah. It'd be interesting. And obviously, like I say, it has to be said, and I hate to say this, but Oshaki Foster is the type of guy that if he got robbed, I don't think there'd be a massive outcry, because I don't think he's got a huge fan base. So he'd be an easy guy to rob. And like we say, it is on a Top Rank show. So if it's close, we might see a new champion. We'll have to wait and see, though. Also on that card, we're going to see Brian Chevalier, who's 20-1 with a draw. It's over 10 rounds here. He gets in with friend of the show, Andres Cortez. I remember Andres coming on. I can't remember how we got talking about it, but for some reason, I remember him telling me that his favorite ice cream was cookies and cream, which made me an even bigger fan of his, because that's mine as well. He's back here. I think he's a slight favourite, but it's supposed to be quite a tough fight. I haven't seen too much of Chevalier. I think I may have seen his last fight against Encarnacion. I might have seen that. I could be lying. No, that's it. I've seen him fight Alberto Mercado. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's been boxing in Puerto Rico of recent times. He's got 16 KOs. That one loss that he suffered as well was by KO. So it's going to be an interesting fight. All the best to Andres Cortez. And yeah, finally, the final fight to mention on this card, I will give it a mention. In fact, there's two to mention here. Bruce Carrington, 10-0. He's back in a 10-rounder here against Bernard Torres, who's 18-1. That should be interesting there. All the best to Bruce. And also on the card, Guido Vianello, 11-1 with a draw. He was quite awful in his last fight against Curtis Harper. Well, he's back here. He gets in with Moses Johnson, who's 11-1 with two draws. He's got 8 KOs himself, and he was stopped in his one loss as well to Walter Burns back in June of last year. He's come back with two wins since then. So these are two heavyweights who can certainly punch and have also been knocked out in both of their sole defeats. So again, you wouldn't expect to see these guys go 8 rounds. So we'll have to wait and see, though. But anyway, all the best to everyone there. That brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news. Then we debated about boxing's best chins. And then we did the preview part to wrap it up, as always. It's now time, though, for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 435 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the welterweight contender himself, Mr. Chris Congo. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. There has been one massive piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's that we're going to finally see that rematch. We are going to finally see it April the 27th. It's going down in Leeds, and we're going to see, it's at the First Direct Arena, we're going to see obviously Josh Taylor stepping in the ring again with Jack Catterall. It's Catterall's chance at redemption here. It's just a real shame that there's no belts on the line, let alone the four that were on the line for the first fight. So yeah, I mean, both guys are friends of the show, but I do want to see the right man finally get the decision here if it goes that far. So all the best to Jack Catterall. Yeah, cannot wait for that one, like I say. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again next week.